Sairam, and welcome dear listeners to yet another episode of our afternoon satsang. It's a beautiful Thursday. It's a wonderful afternoon here at Prashanthi Nilayam, and this is Prem from Team Radio Sai, as always, being joined by Brother Arvind. And just like as we had last week, we are continuing with our Satyam Shivam Sundaram series. We spoke last time about Professor Kasturi, the author of the autobiography, the first four volumes of Satyam Shivam Sundaram. And we chose to speak a little about him, especially drawn from his autobiography. I'm sorry, he wrote the biography of Swami, and we are actually referring to his autobiography, the book Loving God, from which we are picking out a few incidents during that time period we were talking about, that is 1949 to 1950-51, and about his early years with Swami and how Swami captured him and his family. And we will be talking a little more about that, especially from that book. But before we begin that, I offer on behalf of Arvind and all of you our humble pranams at Bhagwan's lotus feet, and we pray that Swami takes us along this episode. Sairam Arvind.
Sairam Prem, and Sairam dear listeners. I thought that it would be apt in the beginning of the satsang to state why we have picked up Professor Kasturi and his autobiography as part of the Satyam Shivam Sundaram.
Right.
Invariably, you know, all of our life stories have got so deeply enmeshed with Swami's life story, because for all of us, Swami is our life. And so too is the case with Professor Kasturi, where Swami is his life, and therefore Kasturi's story is very much part of Swami's story. But Kasturi's story is ideal for discussion as a Satyam Shivam Sundaram episode, because he was a blessed devotee who experienced so many facets of Bhagwan, so many facets of Swami, and his story alone would give us an idea. Rather than discuss hundreds of people's stories, his story would be a good sample of the different kind of leelas, mahimas, as well as the pranks that Swami did. And that is the reason, dear listeners, that we have picked up two episodes to be dedicated to Professor Kasturi and his early days with Swami, because these give us a very good idea of how things were and how Swami was and is in his 20s.
And also because, you know, whenever you have somebody who is a good speaker, a good writer, they tend to document their experiences in life in a very descriptive manner, in which it could be shared and could be even spoken about later.
Also a poetic manner.
In a poetic manner, especially the wit with which Professor Kasturi writes. It's so refreshing to read that, and you know, there's always that that importance given to humor in whatever he writes, and that gives us more joy sharing what he has written. And dear listeners, it's also a plea to all of you, if you've not read his autobiography, Loving God, I think it's a must for any devotee, because you know, not only does it give you an idea of what Swami was, what Prashanthi Nilayam was, and what Puttaparthi was, but it gives you a nice sample of India during that period also.
Exactly.
The kind of changes which were happening, how a fledgling country was coming to terms with the challenges it was being thrown at with the emergence of the new independence.
And just to remind our listeners who have tuned into God's own radio, we are currently in 1950. This is the time actually the Prashanthi Nilayam Mandir got built and it was inaugurated. But we will keep that aside for the next Satyam Shivam Sundaram fortnight, because today we will be concentrating on Professor Kasturi. One more beautiful facet about Professor Kasturi's experiences is the way he has documented them in great detail makes the reader remember similar instances in his or her own life. And that kind of builds a bonding, you know, recreates those nostalgic moments. So many of us, including me, you know, when I was reading the book, if there is opportunity and if there is scope, I will share one or two of those. But even as I was reading these episodes from Professor Kasturi's life, I was reminded of so many similar experiences, and I relived those same experiences and felt that deep connection with Swami, because it's our own experiences that connect us with Swami. And if there is a person who is able to write and describe events in such a manner that they invoke in you your own experiences and your feelings of nostalgia with Swami, what better could it be? And that is another reason why we have picked Professor Kasturi.
And not only is he's a fabulous writer, he's a wonderful speaker too. We played a clip of his earlier. We have two clips here. Let's see how it goes. Maybe we'll play a clip of that. Or should we? Would it be a good way to start with that?
Because definitely,
I have a clip here where he speaks about the letter which Swami wrote to his brother. We had an entire episode on that letter. But he speaks of that occasion when that letter actually surfaced. The first time when he heard Swami's brother, Sesham Raju himself, refer to that letter was during the Shivratri celebrations when Swami asked Sesham Raju Garu to share his thoughts with the audience. And that's when he spoke about that letter which Swami had written. And that's when actually Kasturi also made bold to ask Swami to give the letter to him for documentation.
Wow. For those of our listeners who have not heard that episode, who are not aware of this, or who have come in late, a small reminder that this letter in 1947 was a historic letter that Swami wrote, apparently answering the queries by his brother, but saying that it was a letter that Swami wrote to his brother is like saying that the Bhagavad Gita was a talk delivered by Krishna to Arjuna.
To his brother-in-law.
To his brother-in-law, yes.
Right.
Arjuna was his brother-in-law. Well, it was definitely to Arjuna, it was definitely to Seshamaraju, but through them, it was a message that the Lord gave to the entire universe.
And when he speaks about this letter, it's not completely on the content of the letter, but you know, so beautifully he captures what would have been running in the minds of those family members when Swami declared. And
okay.
What kind of a feelings would have been arisen when Swami wrote that letter. And what they would have thought when they saw this unfolding of this grand avatar. So all that put beautifully in a humorous manner in such a beautiful narration. So that's what we're going to play for all of you. This was a talk which he gave during the 1976 summer course. So a clipping from that talk.
After which we will go into some more episodes and wonderful things that Professor Kasturi experienced.
See, just about 2 years after his declaration that he had come to resume the work that he was doing and that his devotees were waiting for him, and therefore he was no longer the son that the parents thought he was, or the Satyanarayana that his friends thought he was. When he announced that, his brother, elder brother, was rather disappointed. Why rather? Very disappointed. He wanted to make him a kind of an educated person who could get an appointment in the taluk office. And because in that village at that time there was nobody who could read English or speak English, he wanted to admire his younger brother talking English and becoming, they say in those days, eligible for public service. That is the certificate that they give when they pass the SSLC examination. So this gentleman, his brother, he wanted to make eligible for public service. And he wanted everyone to come to his house with an application and say, you are a clerk in the taluk office, you please help this on. And then he thought that the elder brother would be very proud of his younger brother serving in the taluk office. And all the villagers coming to his house and standing in the veranda and asking, may I see your younger brother? And he would feel very proud. That was the condition in which he was. And then he found that this person was going on some strange, mysterious, ununderstandable ways. That he was finding fault with a pandit who was expounding the Bhagavatam next door. He said, what is that man saying? Call him here. And then the pandit comes. He has got the audacity to criticize and find fault with pandits. He has got the uppishness to tell all kinds of things about people. And though they are, of course, found to be true, still, that is not the business that a young boy in the school should do. He ought to read his books, and he doesn't read his books. And what is to happen to him in the examination? All kinds of thoughts came to him. And he wrote a letter to Swami, saying, be careful, young man, These are all things that will lead you away from your correct straight path to the taluk office. I am dreaming so much about you. You must be eligible for public service. Of course, he is eligible now for public service, for the service of the whole world. But he limited him like that. And then Bhagavan wrote to him a letter. Sat down, wrote to him a letter. 16th year. Elder brother, who had looked after him, so to say, who had taken him to the place where he was, who had filled his application form for joining the school, and who was rather proud of the musical capacities, of the poetical capacities, of the dramatic stage capacities of his brother, of his Telugu, wonderful Telugu, of his peeps into our ancient scriptures, which he wondered where he picked up, but still he was happy that he has got a brother who was all this. And when he, very affectionately of course, and very considerately, warned him against going and leaping beyond his capacity, trying to, suppose you try to make a high jump, 6 feet. And of course you'll only break your legs. So he said, look here my dear younger brother, you are jumping beyond your capacity. I know you as from a baby, and this is too much for you. Don't try all these tricks. I know what you are capable of. So please don't jump too high. That was the letter that he wrote. Because we have not got the copy of his letter, but we have got the copy of Swami's letter. It was one Shivaratri night. Swami, the Lingodbhavam had happened. And 50,000 people had recognized in Bhagavan the living Shiva. They had thrilled that Puttaparthi or Prashantanilayam was Kailas itself. And after that, Baba came up to the mandir, came up to his room. Some of us followed him, and his elder brother also followed him. And he came up to his room, and he sat before him. He was also struck by the magnificent demonstration of the divinity of this brother, whom he expected to sit in a chair in the taluk office. Instead of that, he was enthroned on Kailas as Shiva himself. And therefore he brought out this letter that Bhagavan wrote when he was 16 years old in reply to his admonition, and read a sentence or two from that. The sentence that he read was, "My devotees must have patience in order that they may understand my full powers. Wait, and then you will realize my glory." These two sentences that letter contained. And the brother was so overpowered by the correctness of those expressions. "We have waited so long, Swami. As you said, if only I had patience, I could have discovered that this was your glory. At that time, I said, don't jump too high. But I find now that even the sky and even the cosmos is a thing over which you can jump." I was standing by his side, and at that time, being the editor of Sanatan Sarathi, I asked Baba, "Swami, please ask him to give me that letter." And in that letter, of course he gave me, and I have got it with me. In that letter, in his 16th year, an age, I suppose many of you have passed that age, he is younger than most of you at that time, Swami says, what is this that you are telling me? You are warning me? Of course, he did not write the letter saying to my brother. He said, Bhaktulaku. The way in which he addresses the reply is not to the brother who wrote that letter, but to you and me. Bhaktulaku. To my devotees. The reply was not to the individual who wrote that letter, but to the entire community of aspirants and seekers throughout the world. And therefore it is that I am reading this letter. Suppose he had written to my dear brother, of course he can't make it public, but Baba wanted that in this summer course I must mention that letter to you. And therefore he said, Bhaktulaku, to devotees. And what does he say there? Na shakti teliyutaku. In order to know my might and majesty, ink entakalamainanu, however many years, however many centuries may lapse, yettivarainanu, whoever the most cleverest and the deepest saint or sage or scholar or pandit, whoever it may be, yettivarainanu, he may be the most powerful intellect, might be the deepest devotee, he might be the hardest atheist, the toughest scientist, whoever he may be, ettivarainanu, entakalamainanu, yemi chesinanu, and he might do tapas, stand on his head for 25,000 years, do all kinds of tapas that are mentioned in all the scriptures and Vedas, ways and methods, you have got so many guidebooks in order to understand God. Whatever guides you may follow, whatever maps you may have, ettivarinanu, yemi chesinanu, telisikonaleru, can't understand me. 16-year-old boy making that announcement. And I am standing here today to tell you about it. Ettivarinanu, telisikonaleru. 28 years I have sat at the feet of Bhagavan. And the more the years pass, the more magnificent, the more mysterious, the more miraculous the whole thing appears.
Jagannatha, 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 Tune into Sai.
Spend the day with Sai.
From 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m. on Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Stay tuned.
Welcome back, dear listeners. We heard that wonderful talk of Professor Kasturi. Continuing from there, you know, this is something which is a very common phenomenon with devotees. You know, you always feel the more you know Swami, the more you don't know Him. And the other thing is you always want to know something, because have you ever wondered, you know, if you, let's say somebody goes somewhere and tastes a wonderful dish.
Mm.
And if you're a good cook, the first thing is you want to know how to make it.
Correct.
Because somewhere there is this idea that if you know about something, you have possessed it. Or if you're a singer, you hear a nice song, the first thing you want to do is you want to learn the song.
Get the lyrics, get the tune.
Get the lyrics, get the tune. Because you feel that if you know it, I have it.
Correct.
And I think that's the same thing which we do with God also. When we come to Swami, we want to know what Swami will do in any situation. What Swami will... reaction will be to any act or any...
what Swami's answers will be
answers
to any question.
Answers will be to any question. Because we feel that if I know Swami, then I possess Him.
Exactly.
And the more you know Swami, with time you realize that you can never know Him. And that's the beauty, and that is why a relationship with Swami is, I think, always ever fresh.
Exactly, Prem. I mean, you start off with thinking that you know nothing, you want to discover more. But as you said, as time passes, and as Professor Kasturi rightly put it, as time passes, he had stayed 28 years at the point when he was delivering that speech. He said, in 28 years, I don't think, you know, I know anything more than what I knew of Him before. Because it's infinity, and how much ever you go 100 steps towards infinity or 1,000 steps towards infinity, you're still the same distance away from infinity.
Absolutely.
Going back to 1950, after his daughter's marriage had been conducted, Professor Kasturi became a regular visitor to Puttaparthi. And as he himself said it, you know, his visits to Bangalore were often like jail terms for him. Like when he is being imprisoned, because he felt that it was liberating when he came to Puttaparthi. During one such visit, he got the experience of Swami's omniscience, you know, and omnipresence. They had this practice where his mother would offer a glass of milk to Swami every day at their home in Bangalore. Mm-hmm. So she would place this glass of milk in front of Bhagwan's picture. And they noticed that every day, at least about half glass or a quarter glass of milk would have disappeared. And his mother used to always be thrilled that, you know, Swami is coming and accepting our offerings. So, you know, the natural conclusions you draw from this is either, you know, Swami has great love for us, Swami loves us so much, Swami likes milk, that's why He is taking the offering of milk, all these things. But you know, being scientific, this is not Professor Kasturi's, I'm just saying that being scientific, anybody may wonder whether, you know, the milk has evaporated or has something. I mean, you know, what is it actually? And though Professor Kasturi does not document what he thought at that time, he documents a beautiful incident that happened in Puttaparthi, because one day Swami out of the blue just asks him, and not only him but also to a group of people who are there along with him, he just asks a question. And the question is very interesting, you know. Swami asks, which milk is tastier? Hot milk that has been cooled by placing it in a vessel of water, or hot milk that has been cooled by, you know, alternatively pouring it between two glasses? That is one.
Right. Some people have the habit of cooling milk by immersing that vessel itself in a trough of
water,
cold water, right?
Yeah, the other one is, yeah, you pour it into another glass, cool this glass, then right. Pour it back into this glass, cool the other glass, and go on doing this up and down 5-6 times and it's cooled. So, you know, this really put Professor Kasturi and the others in a kind of, you know, they were surprised as to how can a flavor or how can the taste be manipulated by the way of method of cooling, because no ingredient is being added or anything, and they were very inquisitive to know the answer. And you know, as always, Swami seems to give answers for everything except for the most intriguing questions. And Swami does not answer this.
Mm-hmm.
So Professor Kasturi is very, you know, he is very eager to know the answer. But Swami is not letting out the answer. And finally, when he persists, Swami tells him, ask your mother, she will tell you. So Professor Kasturi, you can imagine when he comes to, when he reaches Bangalore, the first thing is he rushes to his mother and tells, "Mother, tell me, what is this?"
Okay.
And he asks the question. And you know, his mother, she is overwhelmed. And she says, "You know what, every time when I placed milk before Swami, I had this thought. And I cooled it by putting it in a trough of water." So then, you know, Kasturi realized that it's not about finding out which one tastes better. It is Swami's way of indicating that, "I know what you're doing in Bangalore, and I know the thoughts that go behind what you're doing also." And that was a way Swami gave Kasturi a chance to experience his omnipresence and omniscience. Later on, you know, Professor Kasturi also got to know that Swami was no big fan of dairy products and milk either.
Right.
You know, he, on one occasion when he saw Swami refusing curds, he was wondering, because at his home Swami seems to be savoring milk, because every day he is having milk, but here he is refusing curds. And at that time, you know, Swami said that, "I have had enough of milk, butter and curds for several janmas when I had come in my previous incarnation as Krishna. So I don't need any more of this, I don't have a taste for this." And that is when Kasturi also realized that it's out of Swami's immense love for him that he has been partaking the milk at his home.
That's exactly just like how Swami chose to tell Kasturi about this milk cooling episode, just to show that he knew exactly what his mother was doing.
Mm-hmm.
I think he referred to the fact that I've eaten a lot of milk products in the previous incarnation. He said that also to show that, you know, it was the same Krishna who's come back again, because he was not tired of doing the leelas which he did in the Krishna avatar. He was not tired of doing things which he did for the devotees. He continued doing them just to show that, you know, it's the same avatar which has come back again. And I think Swami also mentions that it is better to cool it by pouring it from one vessel to the other. I don't know if it's in the same occasion or some other occasion. So if somebody is wondering, I think Swami had suggested that that is a better method. And I think Kasturi's mother seems to be somebody who very instantly captured Swami's heart, and it's quite understandable. Usually the elderly, you know, ladies of the house tend to accept somebody like Swami so easily because of their purity and because of their worship over the years. I think that's what happened. And there's a wonderful description he gives about his mother, how she was very orthodox, but you know, behind that orthodoxy, there was this desire to be all-embracing, which actually burst out when India became a republic, and when openly the politicians denounced the caste system and denounced,
more importantly, her master from the Ramakrishna order.
Right.
I think Shri Gopal Maharaj. Shri Gopal Maharaj brought in, even in the Ramakrishna order, some kind of leniency, if you may call it so, a shift from orthodoxy. And when that happened, Kasturi's mother gladly embraced that. You know, it was as if that she is orthodox, but that is because she has heard that one needs to be orthodox, right, to be holy. And once Gopal Maharaj had brought about this change, she became lenient. And later on, I mean, Kasturi goes on to say that she began to allow people to visit the kitchen, which in orthodox families, unless you are bathed and unless you have been purified, you can't enter the kitchen. So she had begun to allow that. But he says that when she came to Puttaparthi, she saw people from all castes, all creeds, everywhere coming, mingling together, cooking together, instead of being taken aback. See, that is a quality of an ideal seeker. Instead of getting shocked and repulsed, she was, as you said, all embracing, and she adopted that kind of life.
Exactly. You know, when you don't judge the master based on what he does, and then you judge yourself and you judge your practices based on what the master is doing, I think that's the sign of a true seeker, and that's what she was. And there's another wonderful episode where Swami showed that Swami was accepting her devotion. You know, there was that incident when Kasturi used to say that they went back to Bangalore and they started bhajans in their house. And we spoke last time of how Pottiyar became more welcome to, you know, enthrall them with his narrations. So similarly, they also started this weekly bhajan session in their house, for which They used to be the singers, and they used to have conducted bhajan session. And there was this one corner in that whole hall where this mother used to sit, leaning on one particular wall. And she used to be lost in the bhajans, even as the bhajans were going on. And she used to be singing to her own self, and she used to be lost in eyes closed and clapping her hands. So one day when she was folding her hands and doing bhajans, she suddenly felt that there was something in between her hands. And I think maybe for a moment she thought it was some bug or a beetle or something when you're clapping your hands, which is just got caught stuck. Between your palms. But when she opened it, she was pleasantly surprised to see that there was a small
bundle of
tulsi leaves which were there. And I think what's more fascinating is what Kasturi says after that incident happened. He says that every member of the family tries to sit in that same spot, lean on the same wall, and in fact imitate her very action and the way she used to sit with a tilt of her head and see if the same tulsi leaf would appear in their hands when the bhajans were going on. But it was a sign of benediction for her.
You know, speaking about this incident, I'm reminded of both my father and my mother. You know, my father, because he used to tell me that, he had a photography guru, and he and a group of youngsters admired his photographic talent and his keen eye for subjects. And so much was their fascination for his style of photography that they would observe when he's taking a photograph and quickly study the zoom and the aperture settings on the camera.
Mm-hmm.
And then after he has taken his photo and gone, they would go back and stand in the same, he's standing somewhere, his footprints are left in the soil. You go and stand in the same footprints and stand up to his same height, use the same settings, and whether you see anything or not, just click the shutter because if he has seen something there, there must be something there. it's almost like that when you said that Kasturi's mother would, she got that experience and everybody would try thinking that maybe it's the place that brought the leaves.
Please, it's the wall, it's the...
it's the clapping.
Right.
I also got reminded of my mother because, Prem, I told you at the beginning that Kasturi sir's experience are such that when you listen, you are reminded of your own. My mother, she had this great chance of interacting with Swami during our Sai Sannidhi meet.
Okay.
When we were told that all of us could sit with our parents and Swami would come in the lines and interact with all of us. Swami had agreed on that and it was a great chance. And I was here now considering that there are about 150 students serving in Swami's various institutions over here. And all of them will be sitting with their parents and all of them have had interactions of different kinds over the ages. So it's, between the 150 of us, I felt that there is more than 1,000 years of amazing experiences with Swami that is there. And here was Swami who would be going to each and every family within a span of 1 hour. And I was just thinking, everybody is so wise in this gathering. Everybody will be saying, Swami, whatever happens, let us be at your lotus feet forever. Whatever happens, never let go of our hand. Swami, I want love for you in our heart. These are the kind of prayers that wise people make from the Lord. They don't ask for paltry worldly things. And so I thought, these are the kind, usually in a gathering, if there are 5-6 people asking for worldly things, I felt that if I ask for a spiritual thing, I will stand out, right? Swami will remember. Everybody asks cheap things. This is a guy who asked for something really good. But here is a gathering where everybody is going to ask for the ultimate.
Right.
And so my mother was so excited, she wanted to ask something from Swami. And I told her, Mom, listen, don't go and ask Swami for a chance to be at his lotus feet forever or a chance to serve him forever. My mother was shocked. I said, see, mother, because everybody will be asking the same thing. So what is so unique about your request? You get up and tell Swami, Swami, please keep me at your lotus feet. That is what Swami would have heard 100 times before you, there only, on the same day. So this is nothing unique. I told her, ask something unique, something very special so that, Swami remembers. It is something dramatic so that Swami remembers you as a person who asked that question. And all this is the effect of Maya. You think that, Swami may, Swami needs something dramatic to keep in mind, and if it's something casual, he may forget. All this is Maya, but that is what I had told her. And I remember as Swami came close, we got up on our knees and it was a beautiful interaction. And then my mom says, Swami, I want to ask you something. And I was very eager to know what was it that she was asking, because even previous day, at the end of my advice to her, I asked her, what is it that you're going to ask? She tells me that, no, it's between me and Swami, I will ask him directly. So even I was not aware of what she was going to ask Swami. So I was very eager and keen. So when Swami said, okay, ask, what is it that you want to ask? He did not say it, but he indicated with his eyes that you can ask. I was very eager to know what she's asking. And then she says, Swami, I will cook food for you. Will you partake of it? And I was first shocked, thinking, what is it that she's asking? She's asking such a worldly thing. Oh God, I mean, in trying to be unique, she had, you know, lowered her demand. She had asked such a trivial and unimportant thing like that. But, you know, maybe that was what was foremost in her heart. And she said that. And Swami's response totally thrilled me. Because Swami said, yes, definitely. Not now, later. And she was very happy. She got her namaskar. Swami put akshata grains on her and blessed her. And I was smiling, half smiling to myself and to her, saying that what is it that you asked? But anyway, Swami responded, well, it's good and nice. And that was in 2010, right? 2010 it was.
Mm-hmm.
A few months after that, you know, Swami left his physical body. And till then, my mother had not come anywhere close to sending even a tiffin carrier for Swami into Yajur Mandir. So, the next question that came to me is, how is it that, you know, Swami said that he will partake of the food my mother makes, but he said later, but now how is it going to ever happen? This was a question that kept coming over in my mind. And I remember one day my wife gets up and she says, Swami came in my dream and he was upset that we are not keeping food for him. There's a chair for him at home.
Mm-hmm.
There are those kerchiefs that we keep for Swami, everything. But he says, I'm hungry and there's no food.
Mm.
So she told me that, you know, from today onwards, whatever breakfast or whatever lunch, whatever dinner we make, whatever it might be, usually if we have to cook for Swami, we make something very, very special. So she said, it doesn't matter whether it's very special or not. Whatever we cook, the first person in this home to partake will be Swami. And I said, fair enough. And that is how it started, you know. Even if it was Maggi noodles that we make in the morning, the first plate will go to Swami in the altar. And then one day, Prem, we started noticing that in the breakfast that has been kept for Swami, in the lunch that has been kept for Swami, there was vibhuti appearing. It continues even to this day. There is no regular schedule for it. There is no way to predict when it happens, but it happens. And in the food, there is vibhuti. And you know, my mother was so thrilled. You know, the promise that Swami had given that I will part, you make for me not now, later, and I will partake of it. It was manifesting on a day-to-day basis. And it was so thrilling because it is very, very similar to the way Swami used to partake food. You know, everybody who used to send food for Swami, and there were at least, I think, about 7 or 8 households in the earlier days, and later on, different people got chance to send food. And the amount of food that would go in would be enough for at least feeding 30 people.
Right.
But Swami would not eat everything that everybody sends. Sometimes some carriers are not touched at all. Sometimes some get eaten a lot. So it is, you know, it's like kind of a lottery. You send it and just hope that Swami has had it. And that same kind of environment was being recreated for my mother at home, because it is not every day that Swami would partake, or, you know, there would be blessings in the food. One day, just imagine, you have this masala dosa. If you open the dosa, instead of the masala there, there is vibhuti. You know, instead of the usual curry that is there, there is vibhuti over there. You know, it was like a vibhuti masala dosa. So these kind of things started happening and I felt so thrilled. And I felt, you know, that we are not mature enough to understand what Swami says. So therefore, let us not try to understand. You know, what Kasturi sir said he felt after 28 years, we feel after 12 years, after 12 months, after 12 days also. Let us not try to understand Swami, but let us know with conviction in the heart that every word he says is the absolute truth. It has to manifest. And that was my mother's experience, which I got the chance to be a part of. And I was so thrilled, because reading about how Swami used to partake milk at Kasturi's home, what his mother used to offer, this is what my heart and mind went into, and it was so beautiful reliving this experience.
And you know, the beauty is, you have many people nowadays coming in, you know, saying things like, now these things are increasing, and now you can see the number of manifestations increasing, and Swami's vibhuti is coming here. And the fact is, these were the ways Swami actually captured his devotees even way back in 1940s and 50s. In fact, some of the early experiences which Kasturi narrates of Swami's omniscience and omnipresence is all about these kind of things. In fact, he narrates one very beautiful incident where whenever Swami would visit Bangalore and visit some devotee's house, he and his family would go and meet Swami there and seek his blessings. And the more he started visiting devotees' house like this when Swami would attend, he started getting the desire of inviting Swami to his own house. So one of the times, I think his mother makes bold and asks Swami that, Swami, you should come to our house. And Swami promises thrice, saying that, I will come. So that they take it as a real, you know, it is said the truth when it is declared has to be said thrice. So Swami saying three times, I will come, then Swami is certainly going to come. So that's what they think. And one of the trips, you know, Swami promises that definitely this time I'm going to visit your house. But needless to say, Swami doesn't come. They have bhajans and they, you know, have the food and they...
Incidentally, that is a time during that trip, I think it is during Ganesh Chaturthi festival, when Swami has promised almost a dozen households
right.
that I will be visiting. And he doesn't go to any of these.
Yeah, he realizes that later, that the same promise has been given to so many people and Swami has not visited any of those houses. So maybe it's some kind of solace that, you know, you have not been picked out for the misfortune. You have somebody who is sharing the, you know, the disappointment with you. So he goes back to Puttaparthi and, you know, wants to ask Swami that, Swami, you had said that you will come and you didn't come. And that's when he realized that there were others also who had come along with him to place the same complaint in front of Swami. And Swami said, I said I'll come and I've come. So all of them looked at each other and said, no, Swami, you have not come to any of our houses. Then Swami said, mention an exact time during which, Swami said, when you're doing bhajans, didn't the garland snap? And the beauty was, at the same time, the same event had happened in all those houses that Swami had promised to come.
Prem, by narrating this, you know, again you throw me on a nostalgic ride. Mm-hmm. I'm reminded of the episode that came as a birthday gift for me, Prem, last year. It was the 23rd of June.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a concert that the students had to present in Vrindavan.
Okay.
The students, the alumni from Prashanti Nilayam, had planned a concert called One with Sai.
Mm-hmm.
It was a concluding concert at the end of a two-day bhajan workshop that had been held in Vrindavan. We have carried an article about this in Radio in the Radio Sai site also.
Mm-hmm.
That was the time I remember, you know, I got the chance at that time to introduce each of the songs being sung. And I thought, what better way to introduce a song rather than speak about the lyrics and the tune and the raga and the technical details with which I'm not well versed.
Right.
I thought, let me find out the story of association of that song with Swami and narrate that story each time. And that was what I was doing. And finally, we reached the last song, which was a kavali.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this kavali had a very long history with Swami because there were many occasions when Swami said that this kavali is too small, make it big. There were occasions when Swami said, oh, such a big kavali it is, you cut it. Cut it and make it short. So, the same kavali and the same Swami, but rendered to different lengths according to Swami's so-called, in quotes, whims and fancies. And as I was speaking about this, I was reminded of, you know, the famous incident between Arjuna and Krishna, where Krishna points to a bird in the sky and says it's a peacock, he says it's a pigeon, he says it's an eagle, and whatever Krishna says, Arjuna agrees to, saying that, Lord, I trust your word more than I trust my own eyes. Because if you say so, that's what it is. So I narrated this incident of Krishna and Arjuna, and then I said, you know, that is how it is with Swami. If he says it's small, make it long, you make it long. But when he says cut, it just cut. And exactly as I said that, there was a roar of applause. And I was wondering what happened, because the next line was what I thought would be the punchline. I wanted to deliver that punchline. Now I have even forgotten that. But I had written down that punchline so that I don't miss it or mess it up. But before I could deliver the punchline, they were clapping and I was wondering what happened. And I looked at some of the people in the first few rows,
mm-hmm.
and they are pointing behind me. And I looked behind, I just saw that beautiful brass idol of Lord Krishna on the stage at Sai Ramesh Hall in Vrindavan.
Right, right.
And I couldn't make out anything, so I just assumed that something might have happened. And so I nodded, and I just concluded, because, you know, people were applauding and they were on such a high, I felt that my punchline could not take it to any more high than that. I just said, okay, now let's listen to that kavali and concluded. Later on, I got to know that exactly at the moment when I said cut, a garland that had been tied around Krishna's crown, a 2-foot long garland, literally cut and it fell down and it bought a grand finale finish for the whole concert. Everybody were in tears And I felt so overwhelmed and grateful, and I told Swami, I was thinking of delivering a punchline, but you are the person who delivered the punchline and with such effect. And you know, when you narrated about how Swami said that I have come, my presence was shown by the garland snapping and falling, I got goosebumps and I felt that, wow Swami, that continues even to this day. Your presence you show by snapping of garlands and falling of flowers.
And you know, the joy of inviting Swami and Swami choosing to show His presence through other forms and not actually showing up Himself. I think many, many devotees would have experienced that. May not be to their houses as in this case of Kasturi, but we have invited Swami to the hostel many times. And I remember the way Swami used to play it. You know, He used to say, why the hostel? All of you are here. What will I do in the hostel? And then we would say, no, Swami, we will all come there. And He said, but darshan happens here, devotees will be here. Something or the other, Swami would, you know, say, when all of us are here, why do we have to go to the hostel? It's after all, we being together, and you cannot refute such things. I think that's what Swami used to do with Kasturi and devotees of those days also. Kasturi narrates that incident of, you know, he goes to Swami and says, Swami, please come to my house. Then Swami gives him a cold stare and says, your house? And then he realizes that it's wrong to use the possessive in front of Swami. So, you know, he says, no, Swami, it's your house. Then Swami looks at him and says, who are you to invite me to my house?
My own house, okay.
You know, that's the beauty. The thing is, we think that Swami was physically there and these were things which are happening now. The fact was, Swami was always driving that point that Swami is always with us. And yes, the joy of being with Him physically was immense. But Swami wanted us to feel that joy all the time, everywhere, whether we were in His physical presence or not. And that is what Swami has been doing for 80 long years through all these things.
You perfectly put it, Prem, and please forgive another incident. You know, I just can't help it. You know, we were speaking about how Swami has been the same throughout, and you said about how the flower dropped. Right now, another incident, because I want to narrate it because this is a question of a doubt being dispelled.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when I was in Bombay during those times, you know, at home, all the flowers that are different flowers, usually marigold flowers would be kept on Swami's framed photographs, which used to hang on different walls at home. And my father would go about every morning keeping flowers on all these photographs. And during the day, you know, here and there one or two flowers would fall down. And seeing that, my parents would get so thrilled, you know, as a proof of Swami's presence at home. And they were so, you know, in a kind state of great joy because every day at home, Swami's presence is being seen. So when they used to, I was not at home, I was studying in school over here. And when they used to tell me all this, I used to hear it over the phone and feel very happy. And I used to think that my parents are more blessed because they are at home there and experiencing Swami so much, and I'm here. And you know, in the school and college, you will know it. It's like, it's that competition to get into form, try to get to Swami look at you, try to get Swami to look at you, try to give Him a letter if He doesn't take. And you feel that, you know, I'm here near Swami and I'm not able to get His attention. And there my parents are and they're enjoying so much of Swami. That vacation when I went home, in front of me, I saw one flower fall from the portrait, from a picture. It was sometime in the evening. And you know, my analytical mind, it made a quick analysis. It said, see, these flowers were kept on top of the frame in the morning. Throughout the day, you know, the flower has been resting on the petals which are down.
Right.
The petals. And because of that weight of the flower on the petals, lowermost petals, for about, say, 10 to 12 hours, those petals start, you know, decaying and becoming weak. They get crushed under the weight of the flower. And because of that, slowly the flower droops and then drops down.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a natural phenomenon. There's nothing great in getting excited about, you know, thinking that this is Swami's presence. This is what my mind told me. And I became very critical. And I thought that, you know, my parents are living in some kind of a hallucinatory world where naturally the flower drops. You keep a flower on a photograph for some time. Once it withers, it drops down. You don't think that is Swami's presence. I thought of telling them in an indirect, subtle manner. Mm-hmm. So I said, I'm here for the vacations. Will you mind if I keep flowers for the picture? My father said, yes, you do it. So from that day, every morning I would place the flowers. And you know what I used to do? I used to pull the frame a little ahead and insert the stalk in between the photograph and the wall. Insert the stalk of that marigold flower, because marigold has a little thick stalk.
Right.
Insert it, which means there is no way that till it's extracted out it can fall. You have to the next day take it out.
Right.
Because it's wedged between the frame and the wall. And can you believe it, Prem? From that day onwards, flowers stopped falling at home. And a week passed this way and not even one flower has fallen, imagine. And I thought that my parents would have got the message that, see, this is not something to get excited about, thinking Swami has come and all that. But they never spoke in that manner at all. So I only brought up the topic one day and told my father that, you know, Dad, I think you should only keep the flowers. I'm not devoted enough, because when I play, Swami doesn't seem to show his presence. So my father says, no, it has nothing to do with your devotion or my devotion. It's about Swami wanting to show his presence here. If he wants, he will show. No, you only continue to keep. So that's what my father told me. So I continued to keep, and the sad state of affairs continued. Until one day, you know, when I heard from some of my classmates and friends as to how, what a wonderful time they were having in Kodaikanal, where Swami had taken them, and they were not my classmates, they were my seniors, but I got to know that, and you know, I began to miss Swami so much. Because in spite of all my doubts and whatever I think, you know, Swami's physical presence is so endearing, so beautiful, so charming that you begin to miss it. So I was missing it so much. I remember I took a harmonium and whatever little I know, I was keeping a scale and I was just singing out. Because, you know, Swami says he is a Bhava Priya, he loves the feelings. So I was having such feelings of love for Swami. So I was just singing all alone, you know, luckily. I feel that's it. Even if you don't have a voice and you feel that Swami loves feelings, sing it when you're alone. Don't try to sing in a public meeting and say that Swami loves only feelings. If it's only feelings, you can offer it to him in the solitude of your room. So anyway, that is what I was doing. And during one bhajan, I remember that bhajan also, it was Sai Ram, Sai Sham, Mere Sai Ram. Right. That bhajan, as I am singing that bhajan, the emotion became so overwhelming that I closed my eyes, my voice choked, and tears began to flow out, and I was crying. I was crying like a baby, saying, Swami, I miss you, I miss you. And even as I am saying it, I hear a thump. It was a quite loud thump and it made me jump. I opened my eyes, and what do I see? On the reeds of the harmonium, there is one big orange marigold flower. And I wondered from where it came. I looked. I was sitting at least 1.5 feet away from the wall, on which was this big portrait of Swami.
Okay.
On them were 9 marigold flowers, all of them inserted the way I do it so that they don't fall. And that had fallen, the center one had fallen onto the harmonium. And that, you know, made me get so thrilled. My tears stopped immediately and I was like in a state of shock. I remember I ran out. It was a holiday, so my father was also at home. I ran out and I said, Dad, the flower has fallen. Swami has come. Flower has fallen. Swami has come. Okay, and he comes and he's not expressing as grandly as I am expecting him to, because, you know, this is something phenomenal. He says, yes. I said, Dad, do you realize? I mean, this is, flower has fallen. He says, yeah, this is the excitement we feel whenever it falls. How, at that time, you know, I couldn't tell him that, you know, this is different. This is not your flower. This is my flower. I have inserted. There's no way. This is genuine Swami's appearance at home. But, you know, that was an incident that convinced me that it's not that Swami needs your help to keep the flower in an easy way so that he can drop it. If he wishes, he can drop it anyway. Because after that, I noticed that even though I didn't insert the flower, sometimes whole days would pass without any flower falling. So it's all the playing of the mind, and it's the monkey mind, literally, because 2-3 times Swami has told me, monkey mind, monkey mind. But now I realize that there is nothing like impossible for Swami. Whether it's the smallest of small things or the biggest of biggest things, whether it is a thing that we consider trivial as a falling of a flower, or something as grand as Swami appearing in our home, both are equally easy for Swami, and that is something that we must always keep in our hearts.
Maybe a word of caution here, you know, generally what happens is, when you feel something like this, there are moments when there are some small things which will give you this feeling that yes,
this is Swami showing His presence. But unfortunately, not always people around you will actually relate to that much. I think that those are moments when you have to cherish that incident to yourself. Exactly. You shouldn't let anybody take away the joy from you, and that's what happens. You know, even you tend to do that. You know, somebody comes with you with an immense feeling of, you know, this is what happened and there was this beautiful coincidence, which I'm sure is what Swami did for me. You are not in that situation. You're not in that moment of emotion. You might not be able to relate to that person. I think it's very important for us to keep it to ourselves and cherish it before we share it to anybody and, you know, let anybody take away the joy of that moment.
Very important point you have made, Prem. I think unless we are strong enough to receive a cold response, you know, here I know you, I know you trust me and I am sharing it. Okay, and if at all, you know, as you said, forget about your attitude. Just the thing that you might not have had such a good day. On that time when you come and tell something, that you may say, okay, nice, good the flower fell. That kind of response should not put you off, because it's your experience.
Right.
Your experience is something that's for yourself. And it is a basis for you, though it might not mean anything to anybody else. That is what we discussed about Swami being the God of small things. And that is why I feel, you know, Swami used to always emphasize, come, see for yourselves, experience, and then have faith. Because faith is built upon in an individual capacity. You don't get faith because of others' experiences, because there are many occasions when you don't get faith by your own experiences also.
Right.
Faith is something that is totally dependent on the individual. And as you rightly said, such incidents and experiences where there is a chance that people may call it coincidence or people may just put it off, share it only if you are strong enough to receive a cold response. Otherwise, cherish it in your heart and enjoy the joy.
And the other thing is, share it with people who will really relate to what you're saying. You know, that's what... Talking about flowers and garlands, maybe it's not out of place to skip a few, you know, episodes and go to another episode which is very similar. Maybe it'll fit in here because of the theme. Is that of an incident which is related to Anantappa, who happens to be the peon who is given to Kasturi for his personal quarters when he moves in as the principal of the college in Davangere, right? That's a bigger story. Maybe we'll come to that after we narrate the episode of how he gets posted there. That also has a blessing of Swami. But, you know, there is this peon. The way Kasturi Garu narrates it is beautiful. He says that there are a lot of peons in the university campus there, and you are allowed to pick as a principal one of those peons who can be useful to you in your official residence.
There were 12 peons.
And he chooses Anantappa because he knows that he is the most, quote unquote, dumb of all of them.
He calls him that he was a dullard, and he was not sharp at all in the worldly sense. But he was a very, very deeply spiritual man, an evolved soul, he felt, because all his life the only thing that mattered to him was his worship of Swami. And it was Anantappa's love for Swami that made Kasturi pick up Anantappa as a peon, though he was not sharp in mathematics, though simple calculations would put him off, get him confused. He found it difficult to obey even a slightly complicated command, a complex command. Only simple commands he could do, but still Kasturi had accepted Anantappa.
And also because if he were to be in the service of anybody else, there's very less chance of him continuing. He was sure to be thrown out because of, you know, his inability to carry out even simple commands. But this Anantappa, as you said, you know, the way he would stand outside, and Kasturi narrates how there was a stool which was designated for him, and most of the day he would sit and doze off. But the moment he would hear the aarti being offered, he would wake up and come in front of the idol and come and accept the prasadam. And that's his devotion. And in fact, Swami validated that this was not any ordinary person, but he was a person who was in deep devotion to him. When once Swami gave a picture of himself to Kasturi, when Kasturi visited Puttapati and said, "This is for Anantappa, go and install it in his hut." You know, a huge picture, and that itself showed that, you know, Swami was acknowledging this person's devotion. So Kasturi very religiously takes it and puts it in the hut of Anantappa. And there in that slum, you know, here is this person who is a peon in the university, who is regularly conducting bhajans, and all those people around would come and sit and take part in that worship. In fact, Swami even describes Anantappa as Vibhishana.
No, that is Kasturi describing.
No, Swami describes actually.
Oh, okay.
In one of the occasions, Swami says that he is like Vibhishana.
Vibhishana in Lanka.
In Lanka. Because among those unpious, here is a pious soul.
You know, Swami has often said, I don't know if I'm wrong in this Telugu, but I would like to make an attempt. He says, Yevariki yanta telachina anta mat, means something. Okay, I messed it up. Swami says, for each one to the amount that he or she puts in the effort. And, you know, for all the love that Swami showered on Anantappa, the major incident which we will describe possibly after a break, Anantappa too, you know, displayed remarkable faith in Swami's words. It was one occasion when, you know, his eldest daughter became very, very sick. And when she became sick, Anantappa goes to Swami and Swami tells Anantappa that, you know, her end is near. She will not last another month. So don't waste any medicine on any pills and pricks. And pricks meaning the needle, injections. Don't waste on any treatment. Just let her be peaceful at home. And can you believe it? Without even the slightest hesitation, Anantappa follows Swami's words, and exactly within 1 month, his eldest daughter passes away. At the same time, you know, Swami gave a different treatment. One night, Anantappa wakes up with a start because he has had a dream in which Swami has come and said, get up, find out what's happening to your sister-in-law. And when he wakes up, he sees that his wife is also awake. Why? Because she too had a dream in which Swami came and told, get up, see what's happening to your sister. And both of them go, they come to see that that lady is being beaten up by her husband. And they are actually in time to save her. And, you know, Swami saves that lady in this manner through Anantappa. On another occasion, you know, when a mad dog, a rabid dog, bites his own wife, Anantappa goes to Swami, and Swami says, you don't worry, she will be totally fine, give her this vibhuti. So, as Kasturi puts it, rather than trust Pasteur, that Louis Pasteur who found the vaccine for rabies, Anantappa trusts Puttaparthi, and doesn't get her any injections or anything, just gives her the vibhuti, and she's totally healed. So that was the kind of personality Anantappa was, on whom Swami showered so much love and grace. And the most beautiful story, which Kasturi found it, that he must record it even as part of his own autobiography. We will reveal it, we will narrate it, and enjoy that episode after this small break.
प्रेम की ये पुकार दिल की पुकार तुमको अर्पण करे साईं मां मंजिल भी तुम्हें रास्ता भी तुम्हें हर कण कण में तुम्हें साईं मां से हमारी और भी है रह गई बातें कही यादें जुड़ी तुमसे हमारी और भी है रह गई बातें कही गम है जो भरे सब प्रेम तुम्हारे हम जो भी आज है तुमसे ही बने
या విద్యార్థులారా,
నా పెద్ద ప్రాపర్టీ కాలేజీ పిల్లలే.
నాకు మీకు డైరెక్ట్ కనెక్షన్ ఉంటుండదు. నా వెంటనే ఉన్నాడు అనేటువంటి భావాన్ని దృఢం చేసుకోండి. ఈ రెండు సంబంధాన్ని భద్రంగా పెంచుకోండి.
ప్రైమరీ స్కూలు, కాలేజీ, హైయర్ సెకండరీ స్కూల్ వీళ్ళందరూ పిల్లలంతా కూడా నా వెంట వెంటనే ఉంటుంటారు. నన్ను వదిలి వారు పోరు, వారిని వదిలి నేను ఉండలేను.
కనుక మా విద్యార్థులే నా ప్రాపర్టీ.
అడుగు అడుగునా నడిపించే సకుడవు, అణువు అణువులోనా వినిపించే వేణు. విడదీయలేనిది మన బంధమే ఇది, ప్రేమకై అంకితం మన ప్రియ స్వామికై అర్పితం మా హృదయం.
పుకార్ హర దిల్ కీ పుకార్ తుమకు అర్పణ కరే సాహీ మాన్
మంజిల్ భీ తుమ్హీ రసదా భీ తుమ్హీ హర కణ కణ మే తుమ్హీ సాహీ మాన్.
Welcome back, dear listeners. What you heard was a beautiful song which was composed for the drama which was put up by the school, which happened during the annual sports and cultural meet. This is a song which was sung and recorded in our studios. We have it for download on our website, and if you wanted, you could still go there. The name of the drama was Prem Ki Pukar, and this was the final song of that drama. Coming back to our discussion, we were talking about Anantappa. We spoke about how Swami, even in the 1940s, when he was so available, if you could put it that way, for his devotees, he did even then choose to show his presence and show his benevolence through very little acts of omnipresence. We were talking about Anantappa, the pune of Professor Kasturi, when he was the principal of the college in Davangere. And the beautiful incident which he had, you know, relating to this garlands and the garland snapping. You know, we spoke of that portrait which Swami gave him, and he had installed that in his hut. And once when Kasturi had gone to meet him, you know, in the slum, he narrates of an incident where he would see on many occasions, Anantappa would be standing in front of that portrait and talking to Swami as he is talking to Swami when he visits Puttaparthi. And during one of those occasions, you know, he found that there was this picture of Swami which he had installed, and above that there was a picture of Shirdi Baba. And once a garland had fallen from Shirdi Baba's picture.
Okay.
And here was Anantappa standing there, and he was saying that, Swami, this is not fair. You know, I don't know that man. I come to you. You know, I pray to you. So if you want to show your presence, you should have flowers from your garland snapping, not from his picture. And even as he was saying this, you know, Kasturi would see that the flower from the garland which was put around Swami's picture would snap and come straight to his palm.
Straight to his palm.
He would say directly aimed at his palm. And then Anantappa would feel happy. Yes, Swami, now I'm happy, now I'm pleased. You know, that was the kind of innocent devotion that this man had. And you know, that's the beauty of Swami's relationship with his devotees. You know, when you come and become a devotee of Swami, it doesn't mean that all your worldly problems just vanish with a snap of his finger. You still go through whatever you have to go through, But Swami says that, I am there with you, I am going to take care of you. In fact, one occasion when Kasturi makes a big blunder and he goes to Swami and says, Swami, I don't want to continue as this principal, please let me relinquish this post and come and settle with you. Swami gives him a description of the whole event and says that this all happened. Don't worry, you keep falling, I'm just behind you, I'll pick you up every time you fall. You know, that is the beauty of the incident, that is the beauty of Swami, and on many occasions Swami proved that even in Antapa's life. You know,
Poignant among those episodes, we heard of how, you know, Swami had told him not to worry about his elder daughter,
right.
Because she's going to pass away anyway, and that's what happened to her. Now, his younger daughter was married to a person who was working in some high post in the railways. And he was always, you know, mistreating his wife. In the sense, Anantappa's youngest daughter was not treated well by her husband. And how Swami came to her rescue is this story that we are talking about.
Right. You know, this person, I think he had some kind of a weird problem, because he would always doubt the character of his wife. And you know, every time she would go to open a window or close a window which was open, he would always think that she is going out to ogle some passerby. And it was a very serious thing, and she found this very suffocating to live with a person like this. And it came to a point when she said, see, if you do not trust me, let us go to Swami. You ask Swami whether I am a person of character who can be lived with. If Swami says no, I will end my life. If Swami says yes, then you live with me. You know, that is the final conclusion they come to when they decide to set out and go to Swami. This son-in-law of Anantappa is not really a devotee of Swami, but, you know, he knows that Swami is a person beyond a normal reason. You know, not necessarily believing him as God, but he knew that this person could see into people's hearts and people's minds. So he took this as a good way to settle this matter. So Anantappa and his wife, his younger daughter and her husband, they all set out to Parthi. And needless to say, Swami calls them for an interview, and what Swami tells is quite understandably what we would expect out of the situation. You know, and Swami looks at the son-in-law and says, your wife is as pure as Sita.
Mother Sita, huh?
Mother Sita. She's as pure as anybody whom you can think of. She's as pure as Draupadi, she's as pure as Sita.
Parvati, goddess Parvati.
As pure as goddess Parvati. And needless to say, this man is quite irritated hearing this, because, you know, one thing is the problem is solved and Swami is telling that your wife is pure, but you have been proved wrong. You know, that is what hurts his ego, and he's not ready to accept it, and he walks out with a sneer. I mean, he starts accusing Swami of trying to take
the side. We also do this sometimes, Prem. You know, we are happy with Swami's decisions as long as it's in alignment with our decision. If it goes wrong, we say, Swami, do you really mean it? We want to check it, we want to test it, you know, even if sometimes, like, you know, we do lots, people throw chits to pick up. If the answer is a chit that is matching what you desire, you feel, yes, Swami has given an answer. If it's something that is totally opposite to what you desire, you think, maybe let me do best of three tosses. Maybe let me do best of five tosses, you know, as if you need a majority mandate from Swami to take the decision.
Yes, somebody said, if you have two choices to make, and you're wondering which is the best one to make, and you're tossing a coin, even as a coin is about to fall into your hands, you will be thinking one of the other, you know, either heads or tails. Then you don't have to see what the coin has fallen. You can do that, because that's what you want to do.
Yeah.
And that was the same case here. You know, he got up and he started accusing Swami that you're taking the side of the girl you know, this is not the right thing, and you're doing it purposely because it is Anantappa's daughter and all that. So Swami got him thrown out of the room. And then Swami looked at this family and looked at this daughter and said, don't worry, he will come around. He's a good man. He's suffering because of this doubt which has come into him. I will take care of it, and they will lead a happy life. Swami gives them that assurance and send them away. I think that's when that baffling incident happens.
You know, this son-in-law is so upset that he got sent out of the room, he decides to avenge himself. When they're returning to Bangalore, they have to catch a train at Penukonda. He's, you know, he's working in the railway, so he has some kind of privileges and perquisites, which he utilizes only for himself. He gets into the first class compartment after dumping his wife and his in-laws in the third class compartment. That is what he does. And, you know, I think it's nice to follow Kasturi Garu's narrative style. You know, he stops at this point, and then he says, one fine morning, when Kasturi had gone, was wanting to go to his college, he was waiting at the bus station, waiting for the bus to arrive, when suddenly on a jatka is a horse-drawn carriage, he sees one of his former students who is working in the railways.
Okay.
He calls out to Kasturi and calls him out and says, Sir, can I drop you wherever you're going? There's a bus strike going on, so you cannot catch a bus. So I'll take you in the horse carriage and drop you wherever you have to go. So Kasturi decides to join his former pupil. And this pupil of his was a big bodybuilder or a kind of wrestler. And he never, you know, seemed to have any inclination towards Sai Baba, Swamis and all this. So Kasturi knows this. But the first thing that this student tells him is, Sir, can you tell me how to go to Puttaparthi? I want to have darshan of Sai Baba. And Kasturi is shocked. What on earth did happen that this student of mine wants to see Sai Baba? He asks, why do you want to see Sai Baba?
Right.
And then he says, Sir, you know that I work as a railway guard. I want to narrate some amazing incident that happened a few nights back. And then, you know, that is when Kasturi is able to put together that this railway guard incident is something related to Anantappa's son-in-law. He says that in the train, there was this person who put his in-laws and his wife in a third-class compartment. He got into a first-class compartment. And he spoke to me about it because I was a railway guard. And I put him in a first-class compartment because there were no reservations. And the train moved, and after Penukonda, the next station towards Bangalore is a place called Tonde Bhavi. Mm-hmm. It's there even to this day, if you go, travel by train between Bangalore and Puttaparthi. So at Tonde Bhavi, he says that this person came screaming out of the first class compartment. It's the middle of the night. He's screaming and knocking on the door, and he jumps out and he says, I don't want to go back in, and he's holding his cheeks. So the guard asks him what happened, and he says, just a few minutes before Tonde Bhavi station comes, suddenly all the lights start glowing red. You know, almost it looks as if the whole compartment is angry on me and this whole compartment is empty. All the lights change color to red. And he says that in that redness, I saw this orange robe and Swami come there. And he started pummeling me, beating me into pulp. Slaps, boxes, everywhere there is Swami, and he's pummeling me literally. And he's saying, when I say that she is pure, you are not ready to accept it. If you don't accept it and if you continue with your kind, this kind of treatment, this is what you will get. And he says, the amount I have been beaten, I cannot bear with this. And you know, because the train has just stopped at Tonde Bhavi, the guard, that is Kasturi's student, walks into the compartment, he says, nobody is there. And here is this person claiming not only did Sai Baba come and bash him up, but there were several Sai Babas bashing him up simultaneously, telling him, beware if you touch your wife in that wrong manner, criticizing her after I have assured her purity, you know. And he says that is what, you know, hearing that narrative, I decided that I must. And I know, sir, that my teacher, you are a staunch devotee of Baba, therefore I thought I'll ask you. And you know, Kasturi heard this narrative, the story does not end there. He gets to know later on from Anantappa that this husband has become a very meek and timid form of his previous self. In fact, Anantappa's daughter writes to him saying that now once in a month when he gets his salary, he comes and gives the whole salary to his wife and takes 15 rupees as his pocket expenses for the month. So timid he has become. And Kasturi is just left wondering, you know. He's left wondering, and he decides that when I go to Swami next, I will confirm the story with Swami also. So when he comes to Swami, he tells Swami, you know, that time somehow the topic comes about Shirdi Baba, and they're discussing about Shirdi Baba, and Kasturi feels this is an opportune moment. So he says, Swami, we have heard of, you know, Shirdi Baba beating up people. You are Shirdi Baba's reincarnation. Have you given up beating people now? Swami says, you know, that was a different form. This form is all love. So I don't beat. So then Kasturi says, of course, Swami, you don't beat physically, but, you know, in some other form, in some other ways, have you ever delivered a beating? And Swami says, you know, Swami definitely knows what Kasturi is referring to. So Swami says, Kasturi, everything is love. That day also it was love. Love for that, love showered on that poor daughter of Anantappa. That's all Swami says. So, you know, Swami accepts. At the same time, You know, Swami says that is also love. That is also love showered on the daughter of Anantappa. And that is how, you know, Kasturi gets a completion. He gets closure on this episode from all quarters. And it's so beautiful, you know. It is also reassuring to us that all we need to do is stick on the path of virtue and follow all that Swami says, because I don't remember, maybe it was a teacher who said it, that, you know, the Lord will tolerate if anything happens to him, but not if a hair on his devotee's head is harmed.
And you know, this whole incident and the narrative about this pune Anantappa also breaks that fallacy which people always come to Swami, that Swami is for the influential and Swami is for the rich and the powerful. We spoke of how Swami visited the house of a cobbler, and here is how Swami is favoring and, you know, looking into the small problems of a pune. I remember one devotee was narrating once when they were traveling with Swami. I think this was when Swami was actually leaving for the East Africa trip, I think. I think he had the blessing of driving Swami to the airport in Madras. You know, when they were traveling, there was one point when they were caught up in a traffic junction. Okay, and Swami was there in the car and this person was driving. And you know, this happens, I think, in big cities when there's a traffic, and there would be some people who would come and start cleaning your car, you know, just as a small favor offered, and they will ask you for some money in return. So when this car and Swami was in the car and they were in this traffic, this was in the early days. I think now if Swami, in the recent, when Swami would travel into these cities and Swami would have
a convoy and a clearance.
The clearance and all that. So that time Swami was waiting in the car in a traffic, and there was this man who was dressed up in tattered clothes and he was coming in wiping the car. And just then Swami looked at the person who was sitting next to him in the car. Swami said, "Go and call that man." Okay, so immediately the person came out of the car and accosted this man. He just thought he was a poor man, and Swami wanted to give him something. But the moment this person called him out, and this person just took to his heels, he just ran away from there. So then Swami looked at him, and Swami, Raja Reddy was with Swami then. Swami told this devotee, "You don't run after him." He told Raja Reddy, "You go and call that man. He will recognize you." So Raja Reddy was wondering, who is this person? He went after him and calls this man, and needless to say, this person recognizes Raja Reddy, and he comes back and he was scared. So meanwhile, Swami was telling the story of this man to this devotee. He said, "See, he was a very, very rich man. He lost all his money, you know, with his bad business and all that. And he is indebted. So a lot of debtors are after him. So if you call him, he will think that you're one of the debtors who are after him. That's why he's running away. That's why I sent Raja Reddy, because he knows him." So this man came, and very punily and very meekly, the moment he saw Swami, he burst into tears and fell at Swami's feet in the middle of the road there. And Swami said, "See, I know you. I know your plight. I just wanted to assure you that I was taking care of you then, and I'm taking care of you even now.
Beautiful.
Even though you have lost everything, I'm still taking care of you. I just wanted to let you know this. That's why I called you."
You know, Swami has no distinctions. In fact, even this, we were speaking about later on how Swami would have a convoy. You know, I remember when Swami got that Z-level security for himself, he never asked for it. It was a devotee that went and requested and said, "Swami, please, please, you must, for our sake, have this." I'm reminded of an episode in Shirdi Baba's life when a person comes from the Himalayas thinking that Baba is a fakir, and then when he sees his reality, he falls at his feet and says, "Baba, you are the Lord of Lords, the King of Kings. You need to live amidst, you need to live in a palace. Why are you in such tatters?" Shirdi Baba says that, "I have no desires of my own. Whatever my devotees offer and they desire, that is what is my desire too. Now they are offering me this and I am here. If they offer me anything else, I will accept that. It is for their joy." And so even when Swami accepted a convoy, Swami accepted security, it was only for the joy and satisfaction of the devotees. He always gave himself completely to the devotees. Maybe we can conclude with this episode where, you know, again it's mentioned in the same book, Loving God, and in the 1950s only, when Kasturi says that there was this set of devotees who arrived from Telangana, the Telangana region in Andhra Pradesh.
Mm-hmm.
And this was the time, when was it that the general hospital was inaugurated? It was in
I think 54 or
something like that, right? So it's again, the story is based in the 50s when the general hospital was under construction. So Kasturi says that these youth, they came and they were so full of energy and vigor that they helped move cement blocks, rocks, sand, everything, and they were working like, you know, literally like some drought animals. You know, that was the amount of magnitude of work that they achieved. But they were also very uncouth. So Professor Kasturi used to see that these people, when they come to Swami's room, Swami is very free with them, mm-hmm. but they seem to take it too much. In the sense, they take too many liberties. He saw some of the youth opening Swami's paan box and partaking of the paan.
My God.
He was shocked. He said, what is this indisciplined people? What bad people? In fact, I don't know if you remember this photograph. It is there in Loving God. Mm-hmm. It happened with this group of devotees from Telangana. They one day caught Swami and they said, Swami, you know, we have got one new electronic gadget. That was something for a thrill for them. It was a camera.
Okay.
And they told Swami to sit, and they told Swami, as if Swami did not know, Swami had photographers from the 40s itself. But they said, Swami, you sit, we'll show you what it is. So they take a picture and Swami says, wait, you are not coming in the picture, I will take your photograph. At that time they say, Swami, don't you have, you know, normal common sense? In the sense, we want you in the picture, how can you? Swami says, no problem. And he tells all of you, sit, I am also there. And it's an empty chair and Swami is taking the photograph. At this time, you know, Kasturi is there, and because Swami has assured them that I will be there in the photograph, they're also thrilled and they're sitting with such faces of devotion, you know. But Kasturi thinks that, oh, will it really come? He's thinking of how Swami might superimpose himself. So he keeps his hand on Swami's footrest, thinking, let me see in the photograph whether my hand will come over Swami's feet or will Swami's feet come over my hand. You know what happens? As Swami is about to take a picture, he says, Kasturi, pick your hand out. Makes him take away his hand and then takes a picture. And that picture has been presented in the Loving God book. You know, it's been titled, He Clicked at His Empty Chair. And Swami is there with all these Telangana youth and Professor Kasturi. Now, at the end of it, you know, Swami tells the Telangana people that, I will visit your hometown. Mm-hmm. They say, Swami, yes, we will arrange. And they arrange two jeeps. And Kasturi is thinking, what is this Swami? He's going and giving them so much. They don't deserve so much. And then the next day he hears that Swami is sending word for him. So that is the day when Swami is leaving for Telangana, and he thinks that, wow, this must be because Swami will be telling him that you come in my jeep, or which, what is his position? Because he has packed his baggage and he's also ready. He travels wherever Swami goes. Swami tells him, Kasturi, Sheshagiri Rao, he was 70-year-old at that time. Mm-hmm. He was the first priest, as we have spoken about. He needs some help in packing, you help him. And after that, I'll be gone for 2 or more weeks. Take care of the ashram. And Kasturi is shattered. How can I, you know, Swami is not taking me along. And Swami tells him, you felt right that these are so uncouth people. How can anybody tolerate to be with them? So I don't want to put you to difficulty. So don't come. I will go with them and come. And that is the time, you know, Kasturi realizes that really Swami has nothing called discrimination. He seeks only a pure heart. And if the heart is not pure, you know, Kasturi Garu, we know what a great devotee of the Lord he is. But even such a person, when he entertained one impure thought, Swami distanced him immediately. I think that can be like a litmus test for each of us, to know whether we are on the right path. If we are on the right path, we should get closer and closer to Swami every moment, because Swami attracts purity. And if we are not on the right path, we will feel a distance that is building up between us and Swami, because Swami is away from the path of impurity.
I think, Arvind, that's a beautiful thought to end this session with, and I think nothing more should be added to that. Dear listeners, we are coming to the end of this program. We spoke about Professor Kasturi and his early years with Swami. Honestly speaking, there is much more to speak about him, and as we said, being a beautiful, very talented writer and speaker, the way he has documented his life is as beautiful as he has documented Swami's life. But we will be continuing with our Satyam Shivam Sundaram 2 weeks later.
And in the next fortnight, we have received some feedback and some very valid points, especially about destiny and free will that we discussed in the previous fortnight. Maybe we shall present that before we take up the topic for next week.
So till we meet next week, listeners, we're going to leave you with a small song. On the other side of the song, you'll be joined by Chandu with his program, Love to Love.